This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
What is up, Straight Fire fam? It's me, Jason McIntyre, Straight Fire for Friday, October 8th. The weekend is here. Gave out another winner on the best bet here on Straight Fire, the Rams. Whew. Thank goodness Geno Smith had to come in. You knew it was locked up when Geno Smith had to come in when Russell Wilson, what is that, a fractured finger? That was so disgusting. I'm eating dinner with my daughter. The wife got tickets to Dave Chappelle last night. So she went to the Hollywood Bowl to see Chappelle with some moms. And I'm eating dinner, takeout, of course, with the daughter while the son's at soccer practice. And Russell Wilson shows like his gnarly finger on the screen. It's like, oh no. You know, my daughter almost vomited. Just a bit of a nightmare in the McIntyre household. Nevertheless, very happy that the Rams delivered the victory. And I just want to point out a couple things. Number one, the Seattle Seahawks are in trouble, folks. This team just does not look very good. I know they took the early lead and people will say, oh, well, you know, they were still in it. They had a chance. If Russell Wilson doesn't go down, you guys can make all the excuses you want. If Russ is going to be gone for any period of time, it's over. Okay? Next week, Steelers in primetime. I know the Steelers are not good. That being said, that game will be close because the Steelers play defense. And guess what? Their offense should mow through Seattle's really bad defense, which I'll get to in a sec. And then they get the Saints. And yes, then they have the Jaguars, but Packers, Cardinals. We're looking at a, what are they, 2-3 now? I don't know that they're going to be 500 when we get to December. Honestly, this team is hurtling toward irrelevance. And you heard Jay Glazer on Fox before the game say, hey, the stunt Russ pulled, he's probably going to pull it again in the offseason. I'm not saying exact. That's not exactly what he said. I'm paraphrasing. But essentially, yeah, the same thing's probably going to play out once again with Russ. And I think it's time now to talk about Jamal Adams, the big story in Seattle. If you have a radio show in Seattle, if you are talking Seahawks on radio, television, anything today, this Jamal Adams disaster has to be your top story for the Seahawks. Because, folks, that was a close game in the third quarter. The Rams had a 3rd and 10. I think the Rams were up 9-7. You know, crowd's loud. You get a stop here, you get the ball back, you're right back in the game. They throw a bomb to DeSean Jackson. They have him with two guys on him, the cornerback leading him to the safety. Jamal Adams is a safety, and Jamal Adams had no friggin' clue where the ball was. Totally de-pantsed by Jackson. Picks up like 50 yards, bing, bang, boom. I mean, they're in the red zone. And, of course, the play, a couple plays prior to that, Jamal Adams struggled against Darrell Henderson, the running back, just totally hit the wrong gap. Got beat, ends up diving and missing the tackle. And then, for the touchdown pass, who does Matt Stafford target? You guessed it, Jamal Adams in coverage. He is a nightmare. This is well chronicled. I'm not being a hater. I saw the guy on Twitter who said, I'm so negative and Rob is negative. We're not negative. This is reality. Jamal Adams stinks in coverage. The numbers were there last year. The Jets didn't want to pay him. Seattle decided, sure, we'll make him the highest paid safety in NFL history. And he can't defend anybody in coverage. One of the funniest stats last year was something along the lines of Julian Edelman only had like three catches of over 20 yards all season. All of them came when Jamal Adams was in coverage. The guy's not good in coverage. He's great inside the box, but you can't just play your safety inside the box, can you? And if you remember, there was a screen pass in the first half. When Stafford sees Adams lining up, he audibles to the blitz. So Jamal Adams comes bum rushing in. You just dump it to the over his head. Henderson on the screen pass, and it goes for like 25 yards. Folks, the Jets won that deal, and it's not even close. They get Seattle's first-round pick. So, yes, I'm going to be anti-Seahawks this year. If the Jets can get two top 10 picks, you get one. You get the cornerback out of LSU, Stingley. Oh, would I love that. Jets need a cornerback badly. I know LSU stinks this year. We knew that was going to happen. I knew that was going to happen. I said it on Cowherd's show when I picked UCLA to beat LSU in week one. I'm not just throwing that out there. Like, we knew Ogeron was going to be in trouble. And it's not Stingley's fault. Stingley's a great, great cornerback. And then I don't know what you do with that other pick. I don't know that you need another playmaker. probably go offensive line, but let's see how the offensive line shakes out when Becton's back. But bottom line, the Jets are sitting pretty thanks to the Jamal Adams trade. Seattle, much less pretty at 2-3. A quick word on the Rams. Didn't love what I saw from Stafford, I'll say. I know he threw for 365, and he reconnected with Robert Woods. And by the way, if you follow me on Instagram, I gave out the Robert Woods over receptions, over 5.5. Easiest money I've won probably in a few days. He had 6 receptions in the first half. So over 5.5 cashed easily. 14 targets for Woods. Big time winner. And I didn't love the accuracy from Stafford on some passes that mattered. Cooper Kupp bailed him out a couple times. And Stafford's got to be better. I think this is a Super Bowl team. They did not look Super Bowl-ish for much of that game. And now they cross the country to play the New York Football Giants next week in a game that I will be definitely. So here's the weird thing about gambling. If the Giants show well against the Cowboys Sunday, the number against the Rams will probably be lower because the Rams didn't look particularly good. People will be like, hey, the Giants are playing well. Look what they did to the Saints. And then they hung tough with the Cowboys. The Giants are good. And we know the Giants stink at home. They're terrible at home. I think Stafford and McVay can just go pound town on the Giants next week. So I will be looking to back the Rams the next couple weeks. Then they face the Lions and the Texans. So I'm just telling you right now, the LA Rams are about to get hot. At 4-1, having faced playoff teams from last year in the Bears and the Bucks and the Seahawks, 3 of their first 5, and the Colts, 4 of their first 5 opponents were in the playoffs last year. Now, I know things change and the Colts aren't good and the Bears aren't that good, but Bucks Cardinals are two tough opponents. If they beat the Giants, Lions, Texans in their next 3, they'll go to 7-1 and be right there with Arizona looking for home field advantage in the postseason. Because remember how valuable that bye is, guys. That is one hugely important thing. The bye this year, only one team gets it. Big time need to get that number one seed. And obviously that matters with the Chiefs and Bills, obviously, this weekend. Chiefs cannot lose that. They'll be, I think, two games back of the Bills, plus losing the tiebreaker if they go down this weekend in the race for home field advantage. Rob G., we haven't heard much from you this week. You got the busy schedule. You were at the Stabathon at SoFi. No, I'm kidding. I didn't even Google to see if anybody got injured. But I don't know. How was the night of football? Have you know your Raiders lost?
It was great. It was like a, you know, Raiders home game, which is always nice. You know, a lot of drunk, excitable fans in the building, which was great. You know, I wish my team would have showed up in the first half, but, you know, what can you do? I will say, you know, I don't want to get too deep into that just because my team lost. So it's not as fun to relive as much as people might think it is. I'm glad that you made that point about Matthew Stafford, because I was on Twitter after the game last night and I saw a lot of people sharing this nugget. Oh, you know, Matthew Stafford threw for 365 yards. He's now at, you know, the fourth most passing yards by any player in his first 5 games in any team in NFL history. You know, he's off to this historic start. Now, look, I picked Matthew Stafford to win the MVP. I have the Rams winning the Super Bowl. But Matthew Stafford, save for the Bucks game, hasn't really been all that impressive to me. You know, the passes that he was hitting last night were a lot of the same ones that I saw Jared Goff hit. You know, but his numbers got inflated because, you know, the Seahawks have the worst statistically defense, you know, on pace in NFL history. He underthrew DeSean Jackson on that big pass that you talked about, where if he hits him in stride, maybe that's a 75-yard touchdown as opposed to a 60-yard gain or whatever it was. You know, Cooper Kupp's making no-look catches. I don't think I've ever seen that before. I think that he's good and their team's been good. And you mentioned they're on track to get to 7-1, which would be great. But I haven't been as impressed with Matthew Stafford as I had hoped I would be.
Can I challenge you on that?
Sure.
So Tom Brady went to Tampa last year, and I think his first 5 games. I know it was a little different with the COVID situation. However, new offense, new coach, it worked itself out. There were some hiccups in the first 2 months. Do we give Matthew Stafford the same pass that we kind of sort of gave Brady?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't want to come down on him, you know, because like I said, I picked him to win the MVP, so I'm happy that he's having the season that he's having. I just think that the hyperbole has gone a little bit too far, considering he was missing a lot of throws last night, and against Arizona, he just wasn't good at all. So I would like for there to be, you know, some honesty when it comes to these guys. Like, don't just look at the raw numbers and say, hey, he's having this historically great start to the season when he's really not.
That's fair. And I'm going to give Matthew Stafford the benefit of the doubt because A, I'm a Stafford fan. B, because I have some Rams futures to win the Super Bowl. And C, their defense also needs some time to sort itself out because this secondary outside of Ramsey has been suspect. I know they lost two guys in free agency to the Browns, but they'll get it together. And guess what? These next three games, I think Stafford gets back on track and heads into Halloween, a hot quarterback. And I would not rule out. I know right now it's like a Dak, Mahomes, Kyler, Josh Allen MVP kind of race. And again, it's early. 4 weeks in the books. It's a marathon, not a sprint. Matt Stafford will get back in that race over the next 3 weeks. You mark those words. All right. Without further ado, let's get to our great guest today. He's at FanDuel, Director of Trading, John Sheeran.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
You know a guy.
Jason likes to think he knows everything when it comes to sports.
I know what sports fans want.
But for everything he doesn't, he knows a guy who does.
Let's just say I know a guy who knows a guy who knows another guy.
All right, let's welcome into Straight Fire a guy who was on here last year. I did a TV show with him. I don't know, feels like a long, long time ago. I think it was only like 2 or 3 years ago. John Sheeran, the director of trading at FanDuel. I mean, he's a big deal. John, how are you, man?
Very good, Jason. How are you?
I love having you on because obviously you raise the culture level here with the cool accent. And obviously, listen, you're looking at lines constantly. I'm assuming as we record this on Thursday morning, you are watching the screen to see if the huge bets come in for this weekend's NFL games. And true or false, are you adjusting lines as we're talking?
We do the vast majority of our discussion on a Wednesday evening. The reason we do it on a Wednesday evening is because a couple of our NFL head traders are actually based in Melbourne in Australia. So we do it at about 6 p.m. Eastern on a Wednesday evening. And then you'll see us kind of formalize our opinion in our lines where we don't have an opinion, we'll stick with the market. And where we do, we'll be slightly off kilter versus what the consensus line is. And gradually, I think, yeah, between there, as we learn more through either injury reports on a Thursday or a Friday, through bets that we see from sharp bettors or bettors we respect, we refine our lines constantly from there, I guess.
So you guys say when you have an opinion on a game, give us an example. Was anyone pounding the table this week for a strong opinion on anything on the board, whether it's maybe the Vikings, who I like a lot and are going up, maybe the Texans, I'm seeing money. Was anybody pounding the table opinion-wise?
I think there's a couple that were a decent bit off market in terms of where our number was. I know that Tennessee was one that we were 6 on. The market opened at 3.5. I think it's at 4.5 right now. We're pretty heavily juiced at that number towards Tennessee just because we thought it should be, you know, a decent bit higher than where it opened. I know Jacksonville come off the 10-day rest, and we know that Tennessee been super disappointing, but Derrick Henry might go for 1,000 yards in that game. And, you know, we just thought that was a little bit off market. So we're aggressive on that one, trying to find another one. I know there was another one we were looking at earlier. I think San Francisco, Arizona is the other one. We only made that line 3.5. So we'll be staying low on the market and on San Francisco. Hard to believe that's all the way up to 5.5. The sharp bettors and the public alike out there who like Arizona this season, Jason, have done really well. And I've no doubt that some of that is reinvestment. So pretty big move there, just a little bit high. And I know we've got probably Trey Lance. So he's a bit of a downgrade for us and still could only get it to 3.5 from Jimmy G. So it's hard to understand why this game should be at 5.5 for us.
Yeah, that's interesting because this is a game I bet Arizona Sunday night as soon as I saw some of this stuff come out. And, you know, I didn't expect it to go this high. But, I mean, John, we're talking about a guy with how many passes has Trey Lance thrown? Like 30 in the NFL, and his left tackle, Trent Williams, may not be there against, I guess, Chandler Jones and J.J. Watt. But all that is baked into the line. That's the thing everybody loves to say. It's baked into the line. But Why do you think these sharp bettors are hammering Arizona here?
I don't really know. We lean heavily on our priors, and maybe our priors haven't caught up with the Cardinals' progression this season. I think they've been in some pretty good favorable spots, if I'm honest. I think some of the defenses that they've come up against, maybe not as challenging as San Francisco. I think matchup-wise, San Francisco, I think, held them to 12 or 13 points last year when they were arguably more hurt than they are now. So I think schematically, coaching-wise, I think San Francisco can do a bit of a job in Arizona. And I think Arizona are one of those teams when everything goes their way, they look good, they put up a rack of points, they move the ball quickly, they run it well, they pass it well, and Kyler's obviously a demon on his feet. So I think they can be overly impressive sometimes. I think we saw the same with them in spots last year, and then these bigger games come around and they give away a lot of offensive penalties. I think they're number one penalized offensive team in the league as well. So those sort of things can hurt you when you're trying to drive on a team like San Francisco. Yeah.
And so let's go back to Tennessee. I am curious what do you guys make of the Urban Meyer stuff? I know it's silly. It's nonsense. We don't really care about the video. We don't care about him staying. But how do you approach the whole, has he lost the team? Jacksonville stinks. They're winless. This feels like their season on the line here. They go to 0-5. It's over. Some would already say it's over for them, John. But I don't know. This division's really bad. A win here, a rally around the coach deal. Jacksonville is firmly in the mix in this division, which is really awful.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jacksonville have a lot to play for, right? Trevor Lawrence has a lot to play for. He needs those reps. He needs, progression. I think we saw some of that from him last week against Cincinnati. I thought he was better there. I thought the overall team were better. Yeah, they coughed it up when they probably should have won the game. But I do think that, it's not a season to consign to the bin just yet. I think the Urban Meyer stuff, from my perspective, Jason, really something we can't pay any attention to. I think it's a little reflective of maybe how what sort of a leader he is, maybe, and how that player impacts the team and what their opinion of it is. But I think they're all questions and ponderables that we'll never know the answer to. So we're better off just sticking to the facts, sticking to our numbers. And I think the rest of that stuff averages out over time when it comes to off the field stuff that we just can never quantify.
To go back to the word priors, so Arizona last year in the first half of the season with a healthy Kyler was, I believe, 7-2 or 7-3 leading the division. Then he had the injuries and it was clear he wasn't the same dude. How do you rectify the priors on Arizona from healthy Kyler, good early in the season, to not healthy in the second half and obviously not remotely the same player, plus the additions they made in the offseason to get some veteran leadership in a locker room for a team that kind of struggled in one-score games with their coach?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Kyler Murray's injury is hard to quantify. Again, we'll just never know how really badly hurt he was. Was it a combination of, the start that they had and more film around, allowing DCs to, come up with better plans for how they managed to contain him? Or was he genuinely impacted so heavily due to the injury that his performance levels dropped significantly? And I think, again, to go back to the earlier points, it's very, very hard for us to know what exactly the truth is. We look at the balance of performance overall, assess that on a week-to-week basis. Of course, we'll allow for injury if we believe he was injured. And I think there's no doubt in certain scenarios he really, really was. So I think that's all accounted for when we come to our rating at the start of the season. For me, somebody in the marketplace, be it a sharp bettor or a lot of publics, just seem to have the Cardinals rated higher than you could ever have them rated at the start of the season. This game probably was like a pick'em at the start of the year.
Oh.
So 5.5 points for the performance levels of the two teams, including Trey Lance. It seems like a lot to us.
Yeah. Speaking of quarterbacks, what is the move from Teddy Bridgewater out with a concussion, likely out this week, to Drew Lock, who looked pretty abysmal in the second half against Baltimore last week? And now he faces a Pittsburgh defense that has a healthy TJ Watt.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at him trending out. We have the game as the Steelers as a 1.5 point favorite. So I think there's no question with Teddy in here, you're probably talking Denver as favorites, I think. Maybe not by a lot. So you're talking somewhere in the realms of, I would say, probably 2 point drop off for Teddy. I don't know that necessarily their ability deserves that 2 points, but I think Bridgewater has done really well, not here, but in previous organizations when he's come in to just, he's really, really efficient and he runs the offense in a smart way. I think he's reliable. He's not flashy. He's never going to give you elite quarterback play, but he's definitely very, very solid. And I think Drew Locke is a drop off from that somewhere in the realms of 2 points.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Sticking with quarterbacks, John, so the Baker Mayfield stuff is interesting. He was pretty awful, right? No Jarvis Landry. He was awful, missed a lot of throws against Minnesota. Then he goes on like Instagram and says all this stuff, and now it comes out on Thursday that, oh, he has a non-throwing shoulder labrum injury. He's fine. He's going to play. But, John, any adjustments on your end to the Baker Mayfield shoulder injury news?
Yeah, I mean, Baker Mayfield hurt his shoulder 2 weeks ago. We all saw it. He had to be, carried off, or not carried off. He walked off his own power and had it pop back in. So he said he was fine. I remember hearing him speak as he came back out on the sideline in the middle of that game. And yeah, I think there's maybe some lack of understanding that Baker Mayfield is a really average quarterback in the NFL. We've seen glimpses of him be very good, but for my money, he's got really talented players around him, probably on both sides of the ball. Okay, he's missing some of his receivers this year with injury, and we haven't seen OBJ back in full form yet. So for me, he makes bad decisions when he's under pressure. Everybody knows that. He knows it. I think some of the frustration has been borne out by what you've seen this week. It doesn't move our numbers a lot. We'll still have him as an average quarterback, and we'll still have Cleveland rated where we have them rated. I think, like you said, he'll play. I think he'll be proficient. I think he'll be unimpacted by the injury. But I don't trust him to make all the right decisions. That said, we can't make this line anything other than pick him. Pretty surprised by the move towards the Los Angeles Chargers. Yeah. I think that's a team that have faced weak defenses. And now you come in against a Browns D that has been pretty good and comes in good form. And I think if the Browns can move the ball effectively, which in certain spots and drives, Vegas could, and I don't see any reason why the Browns can't. So for us, that's another one that we'll be favoring Cleveland quite heavily.
That's one of those weird ones. I don't know how much you value the Football Outsiders DVOA, but they have the Browns as number 4 overall, and the Chargers are down at 14. That's a pretty big disconnect, and the public obviously gravitating toward Chargers, who they just saw Monday night take down the undefeated Raiders. But yeah, I thought the Browns were the side here, but is this big professional money or just public money on the Chargers so far?
I would say it was probably kicked off by probably a sharp bet in the market. We haven't seen a whole lot of sharp action on the game ourselves, but in a game that opened -1.5 when we were 0 before we'd sat down and had our discussion, not a game we wanted to necessarily have an opening opinion on. So I would say it started off probably by a sharp move it a point, half a point, and then I think we've seen some public money on the Chargers for the reasons that you mentioned. Everybody's in love with Justin Herbert, and there's no reason they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
I just don't think the Chargers are maybe as good as recent performances indicate, and I don't think the Browns are as bad as they've looked the last couple of weeks either.
But I'd agree. Now, I think you said the phrase something along the lines of like being early to the market on a move. Could you clarify that? And John, I think a lot of people out there are wondering, like, what's the value for you guys in being early on a market move?
I think, from our perspective, we go up early. And when we go up early, you have less confidence in where the market is. It's less formed. There's less liquidity gone through it. So for that reason, it's likely to be a little bit more inefficient at the numbers that are hung. Our aim is to put the right number as early as we can to every game. And if we believe that, for example, the Titans are a 6-point favorite, the market opened 3.5, it's already gone to 4.5. So we would have been quick to move in that game, particularly when we look at our numbers and say, this game says it's more like 6. And then after Wednesday evening, we take our opinion and kind of confirm it, get everybody's alignment, and then we're more aggressive in how we do that. But effectively, nobody likes to lay a bad number. We want to be quick to make those moves and be aggressive in our opinions.
And has there been a week yet this year where you guys have kind of been hurt versus cleaning up? And I know you don't want to make it sound like, the public's losing their shirt here, but we are a little over a quarter into the season. How has it gone for you guys so far? Are you 4-0 each week winning money, or has there been any week where you guys have taken hits?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm here to report we're 4-0. It's been really good so far. I speak a lot. I'm not a fan of winning at an aggressive rate in the NFL. I want people to have a good experience. And sure, we're all here to make money, but you know, I think products like Same Game Parlay that we have, I think, you know, people who have a winning experience with that early on probably stick with it a lot longer than if they have a losing one. And so far, that's been pretty tough. I think a couple of the initial primetime games overs helped the public. Mm-hmm. But apart from that, it's been pretty bad news. The dogs were strong last week, as we all know. And seeing some money for the likes of the Bengals this week as well, at +3.5 in a spot where a lot of people will obviously take Green Bay. They're the sort of warning games I would have for people as well. But yeah, it's been a tough start for the public. And, you know, hopefully they turn around and manage to get a couple of winning weeks and we get back to more balance.
And I ask that because I mean, and you don't have to give me exact numbers, but have you seen handles slowly drop off? Everybody and their mom is betting week one. And then, you know, you lose a little bit on week one. Maybe you bet less on week two. Are you seeing a stark decline from week one to last week?
Not necessarily a stark. One and two were very strong. Week three was a little slower, and I kind of put it down to that reason. You're right. Like, everybody's been waiting so long for football in week one and two that, you know, everybody and their dog is wagering on it. And then, yeah, if you continue to lose, you're obviously going to invest less. So people are worried about it from that perspective. But, you know, football is strong. You've got a, you know, narrative that we had last Monday night with Tom Brady and going back to New England. That was our highest turnover game of the season. Obviously heavily lopsided towards Brady and the Bucs. So I think demand's still there. We're not worried yet, Jason. But yeah, I wouldn't mind the public having a winning week and getting some money back in the ecosystem.
The whole "we're not worried yet" is funny because you're talking about we need to lose. We need you guys to win and do better. And it's just tough to reconcile that. Like, that's odd. But it's interesting. You said the Brady Belichick split was massive. I had seen some ridiculous numbers, like 90% were on Brady. I am curious. 80-20 historically has been an interesting split. When 80% or more are on one side, go take the other. How have those 80-20 bins this season? And have you seen a lot of them?
Yeah, I think there's obviously, like, what we generally see, Jason, is a trend from top to bottom of good versus bad. So the most heavily bet teams are the good teams, and the least amount of bets are taken on the bad teams. That's perfectly understandable. I get it. It makes perfect sense. And when you get a matchup of good and bad, public tend to just bet the good team, regardless of necessarily being driven by what that number is. We see, you know, I remember New England against Miami 2 years ago, the look ahead was -20.5 or something. And we were still seeing a majority of bets at that number on New England to cover when Brady was still there. So yeah, they're not unusual. We get them every week. There's always a team there that's a big favorite. I think Minnesota this week, probably one where we'll be heavily biased towards Minnesota. I think we've won enough of those battles this season, though, to make sure that we're still in front, like the overall position.
Jeez. Is anybody betting the Houston Texans at this point?
Not really. I mean, the Houston Texans, like, we tend to have a predominant, like I said, good to bad anyway. And then particularly a little bit of a bias towards our footprint on the West Coast, or on the East Coast, sorry. So Houston down there in Texas, not winning very many football games, not necessarily with a quarterback that anyone has a whole lot of respect for in terms of ability. Yeah, nobody's going to be betting the Houston Texans.
So one of the things I did last week, I had, you know, probably my best weekend in about 3 years. I took the teams that were garbage, the Jets, the Giants. I took Washington, and then I took Kansas City or whatever. But it, you know, all four of those teams that I bet had lost the week prior. And again, there's no like trend toward taking a team off a loss. But I don't know. Is there something to the public just saw X dominate? They're going to back them again. For instance, Arizona. And by that idea, you should look closer at, if anything, avoiding Arizona. Does that apply to a team like the Vikings, who looked awful last week, 7 points at home, nothing after the first drive? Is the public really going to come in on the Vikings against a team that's like the Lions, who are fighting hard and covered in the opening week, if you got the right number, definitely covered in the first half against the Packers and have kind of been in the mix of some games?
Yeah, I think it more comes down to the idea that off short sample sizes in 3 or 4 weeks, people tend to overestimate how good or bad teams are. like I said, that's the main reason we rely on our priors. And I think as a result, you get potentially some inflated numbers on some of the perceived worst teams because nobody's betting them, number one, they're deserting them. They're all piling in on the other side. And you can tend to find value, particularly early on before we build out a data set of what the capabilities are the teams are on those kind of yucky teams that nobody wants to bet on. I remember betting Atlanta against Tampa Bay earlier in the year for exactly that reason, and probably pretty unlucky not to cover that spread that day as well. So, yeah, I think that's the reason for it. And I wouldn't, you know, I absolutely wouldn't put people off looking at that as an angle, particularly early on in the season.
Yeah. All right, so two more teams. The New York Giants, who have a bad quarterback and a bad coach, but always cover on the road, are taking money in Dallas. And Dallas, we know, is a public team. They're talked about on TV all the time. I think they might be 4-0 against the spread this year. And the big money's coming in on the Giants, I would assume, because the line's moving their way. What are you seeing on that game from a public perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that the Giants have a bad quarterback. I am a Giants fan.
Ah.
I think he's been really good in a couple of games this season. And I like his poise. I like his arm. Yeah, he coughs it up a little too often, but I don't know that that's necessarily all on him. This has been a really bad matchup for the Lions the last few years. Dallas have given them a pretty good beating every time I've watched this game, and I don't know that I expect a whole lot different this time around. The offense for Dallas is really rolling. They've been excellent all season long. Defensively, they're a little weak. Trayvon Diggs has kind of masked a little bit of that. I'm sure he'll be hunting the ball against the Giants again this week and may well find himself catching another interception. The game has gone. We were 6. It opened 7.5. I think it's ticked down to 7 right now. I expect to see the huge public demand for Dallas. I think offensively, the number of points they're putting up, the way they're playing, will be enough to ensure that we see all that money for Dallas again.
And John, we'll wrap up with the game of the week. Probably the best matchup of the early season for AFC supremacy, Bills and Chiefs. I'm shocked people are coming in on the Bills here. I've seen some 2.5s. Have you guys gone to 2.5? I kind of sort of love Kansas City here.
Yeah, unfortunately, I agree with you. We made this 3.3 in Kansas's favor. So the other side of the field goal, obviously significant. We'll look to be bottom of the market, so the best price we can be on Buffalo. I think we're pretty heavily juiced on Kansas right now. I like the Chiefs. I think this is a big overreaction. They've had their number the last couple of seasons. I think Spagnuolo does a good job coming up with defensive schemes in these big games to maybe mask how weak that secondary really is. I think they've been really bad defensively, the Chiefs, this season. I think that's why you're seeing Buffalo be the public side so far, or at least see some of that money come in on them, because you know they've put up some big points. And everybody sees the susceptibility in the Chiefs defense. So I think I understand why the money's coming. I'm not sure that I agree with it though.
Yeah. And that is the Sunday night game. And as you said, you were loaded up on Belichick Brady last week. So we're shaping up with another one where the public is all over Buffalo Sunday night football, hoping to close out teasers, chase game Sunday night. I don't know, John, I have a feeling you could go 5-0 this week after five weeks in the NFL. Oh man.
Yeah, there's a lot of games here. I thought this was a tough slate. I think I highlighted the ones that were of main interest to us. I think that Sunday night game could come down to points. You know, really, really high totals. It went as high as 57. I think it's 56.5 right now. You know, the public might be able to get a lot of winning bets without necessarily having to get the right side in the game.
Yeah. All right, John, any final words on the overall gambling industry? I know you are a titan. You're getting invited to all these big shindigs. Hell, you might be running everything here in gambling in America pretty shortly. Overall, though, are you having fun in America? I know you guys just got here a few years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's been awesome so far. You know, 3 years down now, it's been far bigger, both from a business perspective and an opportunity perspective than I could have ever hoped for. And yeah, I'm just excited by where it goes. We continue to work hard to make it better for everybody. And I think that's a key part of our responsibility, not just customers, but working with regulators and market access partners to make sure that, you know, we're the number one sports book in the country. That's the fundamental goal. And like I said, I think we've done a good job so far. We have a lot of stuff to improve on. But yeah, I'm just excited by U.S. sports in general. I think a part of that is betting, and it's good that it's finally starting to roll out across the country, and hopefully we're in many more states next year.
All right, John, Great stuff as usual. Good luck this weekend to gamblers, not to you, obviously. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it.
The only thing better than sitting on your couch watching the game is making money while you do it. Here's your best bet.
Great stuff from John Sheeran. Good guy, intelligent guy, really actionable info, and you'd love to see it. Are you ready for my best bets? I will say without a doubt, I'm feeling better on NFL than college this week. I gave out Cincinnati last week in college, and that was my easy winner. After that, it was a little spotty. Ole Miss didn't really come through. The Georgia under was an easy winner. This week, it's I feel like the slate's not as good, and I'm not as locked in. Also, baseball postseason, your boy's in a soccer tournament. Yeah, that's me. There's just a lot going on this weekend, so the Saturday college slate not being great helps. I did take a nibble on Oklahoma, favored by 3 against Texas in the Red River, let's just call it the Red River game, shootout, showdown, whatever you want to call it, rivalry. Oklahoma by 3, but I hate Oklahoma this year. They can't beat anybody. 0-4 against the spread, against FBS teams. Like, I don't love it. I can see Oklahoma finally showing here. So that's why I'm not taking Texas. By the way, Texas's defense is bad. But I think Sark is going to have a chance to win this. So I will take Oklahoma by 3, but not confident at all. I like Ole Miss to bounce back against Arkansas. I took Ole Miss favored by 6. I think my bet of the weekend is probably Iowa favored by 2 against Penn State. This Iowa team, I know a lot of people think they're fraudulent because the offense just hasn't done anything, but the offense hasn't had to do anything because the defense is so damn good. Why would you risk anything when your defense is just locking people down and giving you great field position? I like Iowa favored by 2 against Penn State. I know some Penn State folks back from my neck of the woods in PA listening to the pod. Shout out to y'all. Bucks County represent. And Penn State, you know, they're good this year, but they're not great. That win over Wisconsin doesn't look that great. The win over Auburn's like, Auburn, Iowa's actually played a tougher strength of schedule. And I took Iowa favored by 2. That's my biggest bet of the weekend in college football. This one I don't love. I took A&M getting 17.5 against Bama. Another one I don't love. Jimbo Fisher, just such a phony in any big game, dating back to his FSU days. I mean, you could look at that FSU title he had with Jameis Winston. By the way, the number that I recall is all 22 of the starters, offense and defense, had a cup of coffee in the NFL. I think something ridiculous like 18 or 19 were drafted, but every single offensive starter from that one team had some sort of play in the NFL. Some might have been practice squad called up, but that team was so stacked. And outside of that, Jimbo's always lost the big games. I do think he covers against Saban here. At home in College Station. Should be a good scene. And the last one is reluctantly Georgia by 16. Favored by 16 at Auburn. Yikes. So that's not a great slate. Let's get to the NFL. Again, last weekend was probably my best gambling weekend in the NFL in 3 years. 4-1 in the $4 million contest, so I'm kind of back in that. This one is a tougher slate. Now, one thing I'm going to say, and if you listen to the interview with Sheeran and the other guys earlier this week, there is some value in taking teams off losses, obviously, because nobody wants to bet them. The public remembers what they just last saw. So they're going to gravitate toward, the Chargers looked awesome on Monday Night Football. I'm going to take the Chargers. How are they only favored by 2 over the Browns? I would give out the Browns a little down the list. But I'm a little bit off them. It seems like a lot of money I respect. People I see on social media who I'm like, oh, they have good inside and takes, they like the Chargers. I lean toward the Browns here, getting 2. I love them in a teaser leg. And, you know, you take that up to 9 through 3-7. That feels good. The Chargers, as much as we love the Chargers, let's remember, struggled to barely beat Washington in the opener. Lost to the Cowboys. You know, they look good against the Raiders, but again, it's the Raiders. I know they were 3-0. I don't know. I took the Browns getting 2, but it's not one of my best. I would say my three biggest bets are the Vikings. I got it at 8, 8.5, and 9, and now it's touching 10 this morning, which is a little scary. Divisional matchup. Just check the Lions injury report. Penei Sewell, the rookie, may not even be able to play this weekend. I know you're thinking, oh, he's not that great. Their center and their other tackle are out, so they could be down 3 starting offensive linemen against a Vikings team coming off a loss with Anthony Barr coming back off the edge. I think Minnesota kind of opens up a can here on a Lions team. Remember, what does Goff not like? Pressure. Three offensive linemen down, he's going to be filled to pressure. I would assume that Minnesota moves the ball easily. Of course, when you're at 10, there's always a chance for a backdoor cover, which is scary, especially in a divisional matchup. But a good number for you, Mike Zimmer, 32-15 against the spread off a loss in his career. Crunch the numbers. That's pretty good. I'm not a trend guy. Just I toss out some trends because they're interesting. So Minnesota, I like a lot. Folks, you just heard Sheeran, okay? I don't see how you can't bet Kansas City at 2.5. You have to take Kansas City at 2.5. Less than a field goal at home with Mahomes, with Reed, against a Buffalo team. And I jotted down the quarterbacks that Buffalo Bills have faced. I know they have two shutouts. They look great. They faced a washed Ben Roethlisberger, Jacoby Brissett. Remember, he came in for the injured Tua like in one or two series. Taylor Heinicke in his first career road start. And Davis Mills, who's a rookie, in his first road start. You face those guys. You feel confident. Now you're facing Patrick Mahomes. I don't know if Josh Gordon's going to suit up. There's some chatter he may play. But again, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, these guys murdered the Bills in the AFC title game. I don't know what changes. The Bills haven't done anything dramatically different. These are mostly the same squads. I know the Chiefs' OL is a little different than it was in the AFC title game when it was injured. And the Buffalo defensive line's a little bit better. But I've got to take Mahomes here. And at 2.5, I just love it. I absolutely love it. So the Chiefs, the Vikings, and the third one, this pains me to say, Cincinnati Bengals. And I got a buddy, another guy back from Pennsylvania, who is a huge Bengals fan. And he always is messaging me in the DMs on the gram about, oh, come on, Jay, you know the Bengals are going to let down. You know it's coming. And yeah, I know. What historically, last 20 years, that's what they do. But I just look at the matchups, and I see no Jair Alexander for the Packers. If he doesn't play, you're looking at who the rookie starting on the outside and Kevin King, the human turnstile at the other cornerback, Ja'Marr Chase, Tyler Boyd. I don't know if Higgins is going to be a go. I don't know that it matters. I can see the Bengals just keeping up all day. And I know Mixon may not play. That's fine. But we're talking about a Packers team that's struggling without one of the Smith brothers in the pass rush. Everything I look at here for the Bengals says they're going to score. So, you know, I gave out the over earlier this week. The Green Bay defense is so desperate, I think they went and signed Jalen Smith from the Cowboys, who they just dropped. And just one reminder about this overrated Packers defense. Here are the quarterbacks they faced. Jameis Winston in that game where he didn't have to do anything, but he still had, I think, 5 TDs and 148 yards passing. Then they faced Jared Goff. They faced Jimmy Garoppolo. And they faced Ben Roethlisberger. Hello, Joe Burrow. I know you guys might not want to hear it. Joe Burrow's already better than all those guys. And if you want to doubt me and say, Jason, you're crazy, I can't believe this, what metrics would you like to use? Oh, let's go to Pro Football Focus. Again, not the end-all be-all. Goff, Garoppolo, Roethlisberger, Jameis, none have graded out among the top 25 according to Pro Football Focus. Joe Burrow is sixth. And again, we could say, well, Burrow hasn't looked good. What did he do against the Jags in the first half? Okay, fair enough. Where was Burrow on the road in Chicago? What did he do? Okay, that's fine. Green Bay has a poor defense. Joe Burrow is going to light them up. And again, no Jair Alexander. I like him to Kang tough. It probably feels like a tie game. A minute left, Aaron Rodgers gets the ball and goes down and wins it, right? That's probably what happens. But if you can find a 3.5 out there in the market, you got to grab it. Now, you might not be able to find one at this point. So much professional money's got it at 3, and you may even see a 2.5. I am on the Bengals. I bet it early in the week. I'm probably going to end the contest. It's only 3. I would say the Bengals are my third favorite choice. They get the vote narrowly, and this one may surprise you, over the New Orleans Saints. Yes, I'm finally betting on them. I've faded them multiple times this year. I do not like the Saints this year. It's more of a play against Washington. And I got a number here that Sean Payton, you know, really, really good coach. I don't know if he's one of the best coaches in the league without Drew Brees. He's still got something to prove, right? You lose a Hall of Fame quarterback, what can you do? That being said, Sean Payton really delivers off of a loss, 16-6 last 5 years against the spread after a loss. Now, how many of those are with Teddy Bridgewater? How many are with Jameis Winston, how many are with Drew Brees, the Hall of Famer. We'd have to drill down further. But bottom line is Peyton is a really damn good coach. And if you remember, they went to New England this year off of a loss and beat Belichick head-to-head. Mostly with the defense, I know facing a rookie quarterback, but what, Taylor Heineke is awesome? Because he came back to beat the Falcons in a luck box win for me last week? Like, Taylor Heineke's fun. I joke that he's Matt Saracen, QB1 from Friday Night Lights. But the reality is, Taylor Heineke is, like, okay at best. I mean, is he like Ryan Fitzpatrick light? You know, when there's no pressure at all, yeah, he can deliver. In a big spot, Taylor Heineke ain't getting it done. And I would anticipate a New Orleans defense that got reamed out in the film room this week after Danny Dimes beat him on 250-yard touchdown passes. Does Washington have the playmakers for that? I don't quite think J.D. McKissic, who can scoot, is on the same level as Saquon Barkley. Kenny Golladay, actually, Terry McLaurin's really good. Terry McLaurin's good. And my son has him on his fantasy team. Washington's good. If I'm getting the Saints at 2 on the road, I don't think there's really a home field advantage for Washington. So, yeah, I've got to ride New Orleans there. After that, though, it's slim pickings. Just looking at some of these lines, like, I love the Panthers, but a lot of money coming in on the Eagles. It's like, I don't think that's public money. That's real money. I'm looking at the Tennessee Titans. You know I have a love-hate relationship, mostly hate, with that team. And I can't... It's tough for me to pull the trigger on them if there's no Brown or Julio Jones. And you guys know I talked about it. I think Jacksonville's live this week, so I can't really go to Tennessee. The real tough one is the Chicago Bears. Because I looked at that injury report yesterday. No Akeem Hicks, no Khalil Mack. If they're not playing, do you have to take the Raiders? But at the same time, should the Raiders be favored by 5.5 over anybody? They beat the Ravens as an underdog. They beat the Steelers as an underdog. Who'd they beat in their third game? I don't remember who. Oh, they beat Miami as a favorite but did not cover. So I can see the Raiders just dicking around, screwing around, and basically fumbling this. And not covering the spread. So it's a big number. I'm a little reluctant to fire on that. I like Dallas a lot. That's probably going to end up as a play. It's just too many people on the Giants. Too many squares. Too many people like, oh, you got to take the Giants on the road. Like, if everybody's talking about a dog, then it's probably a public dog and you want to avoid them. Just too many people saying all the Giants stuff. Danny Dimes on the road. Like, we were talking about this weeks ago. Danny Dimes on the road, right? Last week, we were all over it. Now, everybody else is on it. You kind of got to jump off. So, I don't know, guys. Those are some of my best bets here in the NFL. If you're looking at teasers, New England Patriots and Tampa Bay Buccaneers, under 3, along with the Vikings, which one of those guys is losing outright or almost losing altogether? Vikings at home. Patriots on the road can be risky, like a rookie quarterback favored by 8 or 9 on the road. That's insanity to me. But Belichick against a rookie quarterback. I cannot see them losing that. And then Miami-Tampa is interesting because I almost talked myself into Miami getting 10. If you look at the Bucs injury report, like, their entire starting secondary is out. It's crazy. Every starter, including Winfield, from week one in the secondary looks like they're not going to play this week. And, like, I know, can Jacoby Brissett take advantage? Well, can he? I'm not so sure he can. We're talking about Jacoby Brissett, and if the pass rush gets to him and Miami's offensive line is spotty, this could be another bloodbath like when the Buffalo Bills went in into Miami, and it's like Jacoby Brissett, like, you can handle the Las Vegas Raiders one-man pass rush. Can you handle the Bucs front four, which can be dominant, and Bowles and his blitzing? Like, I just don't know if I can trust Brissett, so that's kind of a tough one for me to swallow. But, guys, this is an exciting weekend. If I do well again, I'm going to probably be insufferable on Monday. No, I'll be insufferable anyway. Have a good weekend, everybody.